Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Hello, I'm Diane Callahan, your host of the Lighthearted Life radio show. And our topic today, well, let me say this. A few weeks ago, just not very long ago at all, I had one of those big birthdays. I turned 60, and I have been so excited about being 60 and what that means and how much I'm going to accomplish and how much fun I'm going to have. And I've just been so excited about turning 60. And so it also has sort of made me lean towards thinking about how do I do this aging? How do I do this in the best possible way? And so our topic today is aging powerfully. And I'm really excited for my guest today. Her name is Nan Simonson, and she's a coach. She has a YouTube channel, and she's the author of the book aptly titled Aging Powerfully. Good morning, Nan. How are you?
Good morning, Diane. I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited about our talk today. I feel like, well, you know what they say, 60 is the new what, 50, 40, what, 45, whatever. I've always felt like I'm proud of my age, whatever age it is. I'm not one of those ones who's like, oh, don't tell them or shave a few years off. I mean, I worked hard to get to this age after going through, you know, four fights with cancer, and I'm just so happy to still be here. And my mind is now sort of naturally turning to, all the stuff I've been through, all this health stuff I've been through. Is there a way to maybe do this next decade of my life better so I will be stronger and healthier and more vibrant with more energy? Actually, so I will be more like you, man. you are such a guidepost for how to age powerfully. Oh my God, you titled your book the perfect title. So I want to start by, first of all, let me say this. Your book was very different than I expected it to be. I expected it to be full of maybe recipes or do this, don't do that, you know, the kind of stuff where I'm like, yeah, I know, but, you know, it's harder to figure out how do we get to that mindset to do that. Your book actually tells your story of what you've gone through and your thinking and the way you thought about the things you've gone through, and takes the reader to a place of thinking, wow, she's gone through a lot of stuff just like I have. Maybe not the same stuff, but a lot of stuff. And she came to a place in her life where she wanted more and better. And she did the research. You did all the education. We're going to talk about that. And figured out how to do this. So all I have to do, I don't have to do the research. All I have to do is read your book and follow what you suggest. And because you were so open and vulnerable, it makes the your suggestions of how to live even more powerful. So tell me, Nan, I don't need you to take us through your whole childhood and everything, but you share in the book that you had an almost lifetime struggle with bulimia as a result of a lot of very hard aspects of your young life. How did you go from, because that's a pretty, go from that woman to this energetic, vital, enthusiastic, slim, trim, healthy person who's got that monkey pretty much off her back? How'd you do that?
I love that question. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's a big one.
I'll answer it by first saying that I wrote Aging Powerfully I began writing it in July of 2019. I was turning 70 in January, first part of January of 2020. And I wrote the book, started writing it in July of 2020. And I was turning 70 in January of 2021. Anyway, I am now 73. The point is that I was looking at turning 70. I love what Diane said about being excited to turn 60, because I was at first looking at 70 as if it was, oh, this is so dramatic, the death knell. In other words, nobody argues that 70 isn't getting into and is old age. And I thought, oh boy, here it becomes the black hole. I'm going to fall in it. You know, all this health stuff. Just look around you at the state of health in our society. And I decided that that wasn't going to be the case. I had been a health coach for several years with a lifestyle medical practice, and I saw in front of me all the time that that isn't the case if we make certain decisions. So to answer her question, how did I come through that? The book, the first part of the book is memoir that adds a perspective to then everything else I write. The word powerfully is an acronym, 10 letters that are lifestyle modalities that are all part of lifestyle as medicine, the things that I've seen and learned at the clinic that are, I'll use the word science-based, but evidence in what I've seen patient after patient. So I decided that 70 was the beginning of almost a whole new life. In other words, that I had another 10, 20, 30 years ahead of me. Look at the blue zones. That's absolutely proven out by lifestyle modalities leading to long, vibrant health of, an energetic way of living for decades and decades when we make the right decisions. So how did I get past and how did I get through a lifetime of an eating disorder, which is very addictive? As a matter of fact, I spent from the time I was 14 and became anorexic to 15, becoming bulimic, and the rest of those decades struggling to stop on medications, one therapist after another, all kinds of things that I tried. Well, one thing that made a difference is that I chose a dietary style that just happened to work for me because it balanced my metabolic health, and that was a whole food plant-based diet. Not necessary, but the College of Lifestyle Medicine and then all these board-certified lifestyle medical doctors encourage people to add whole foods that are as plant-based as possible to their diet. So some people simply just add a lot more fruits and vegetables, grains, legumes, etc. I went all the way in with whole food plant-based. Well, because that means cutting way, way, way down on processed food or eliminating it, because that meant being able to eat substantially, being really full with healthy foods, not fearing the carbs that I feared for decades, not fearing being, just eating, because food always had me very nervous. It did exactly what I was hoping it would do. It balanced my hormonal system. It balanced my metabolic system. And so I didn't have the highs and the lows of blood sugar spikes. And I also at that time read a book, and it's in my book, and I'll just say this quickly, Brain Over Binge by Katherine Hansen. She's now, did she get a graduate degree or did she get a PhD? Doesn't matter. She continues now to support people who had eating disorders. She did. She was bulimic, but used exercise, not purging. And she wrote this book, Brain Over Binge, teaching that, and there was a lot of evidence behind that, teaching that we can dismiss urges and teaching us how that our limbic system gets used to whatever we do. It had gotten used to almost 55 years of my doing what I had done as it related to food. And she taught that we didn't have to do that, that we could override it. So simple answer to Diane's question is two things: a more balanced diet and the knowledge that and the direction as to how to override urges to, if you're going to look at food and then behave in a certain way that I simply started ignoring. And that's exactly what worked. I was able to walk away within 3 months, not with a therapist, but with this book and following the precepts and a whole food plant-based diet, which worked for me. And I would say to somebody else, if you don't want to go whole food, just add a lot of really healthy foods in there that are plant-based, because the fiber makes a big difference in the microbiome. That's a whole other subject. Bottom line, it worked for me. That it's been going on 6 years now, and there's simply no trace of that left. Okay, that's the answer. There you go.
I love it. And let me say this. Reading your book and reading about how, because, you know, I've seen your videos on Facebook, and, you know, it's all the vegetables and the videos of you showing how to make this big, colorful, fabulous salad that looks really good. And I love those. But what I read in your book that you enjoy a potato, a sweet potato, pasta, you know, some of those carbs that are, that can be good for you. I was like overjoyed, because I would rather give up meat than carbs, let me just say, you know. And of course, you're not talking about donuts and grocery store cupcakes. You're talking about natural healthy carbs. But I was like, hey, if I could eat potatoes and, you know, get to that level of vibrancy and where my what you said, your weight had just really stabilized at what was the healthiest place for you without you even having to count calories or, you know, obsess over every bite, to me. Now, before we go on, because I've got so much more things I want to ask you, oh my goodness. Before we go on, we are going to take a quick moment to recognize one of our sponsors and partners. Women Lead Radio is brought to you today by Connected Women of Influence and our partner, Microsoft. The Microsoft mission is to empower every person and organization on the planet to achieve more. Microsoft believes technology is a powerful force for good, and they're working to foster a sustainable future where everyone has access to the benefits and opportunities created by technology. Microsoft believes technology can and should be a powerful force for good, and that meaningful innovation can and will contribute to a brighter world in big and small ways. Thank you for your support, Microsoft, and to all of our sponsors and our partners. And now we are back with the Lighthearted Life radio show and my guest, Nan Simonson. Nan, one of the things I loved in your book, in the memoir part of your book, is that you shared, you know, kind of pivotal things about your life and things that were said to you that you observed. And what you wrote was, you would write, my perception at the time. So, like, what I love is that you're showing how these situations or even direct comments made to you or about you, how it creates this perception in our brain. And we carry those because those feel like absolute truth, right? Our brain like processes and goes, okay, so here's the straight joke. Food is your best friend. Food is your only friend. You know, things like that. Your brain does that. And then it becomes pillars of what your brain thinks of as pillars of truth. They're really made out of salt, right? They're dissolvable, but we don't think they are. We think they're pillars of marbleized truth. And that's why changing is hard. You know, we often talk about people who make huge changes and growth or, you know, whatever it may be. And I'm a coach as well. I coach executives and people who want to get the most out of their life. I'm a high-performance coach. But we don't often talk about why those pillars get in our way and how do we dissolve the pillars so that then we can live in the changes that we intellectually understand, right? Because it's not really an intellectual exercise, change. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes, I do. Those events that I wrote about in my book, it's interesting because I wrote about them without emotion. I wrote factually. In other words, these are the things that happened. And yet after the book was published, and it's been, over 3.5 years now, even now, sometimes will catch myself, I'm going to use a strong word, but it doesn't come out as a pitiful situation, but sort of mourning the things that were real that I have walked away from the emotional tie of. In other words, I'd like to give you an example. Feeling unworthy, being kept in a room away from people because I didn't look the way I could have or should have to give validation to my father in his art gallery where I lived in a room. Those things can haunt me, but I've chosen a different scenario. In other words, I've reframed them, and reframing what at one time created who and what I was can give me a new story that I can accept and acknowledge and embrace. However, under certain circumstances, we all can regress to, let's say, earlier states, and this is a whole psychological thing, but we can regress to earlier states, especially under stress, especially when we are questioning ourselves for some other reason, we can start feeling our vulnerability. But all of that can get pushed further and further away, and not buried, just pushed further and further away as we rewrite our view of the past. And that's what I chose to do. I chose to, and the other theme of my book is, or in my book, is the people in my life I chose to be the mentors and examples of who they saw me as, who I then became, and what I saw that I wanted in my life and then emulated. That, thank goodness, became a wonderful trait. Instead of holding on to what I didn't want and ruminating, I looked at what I did want and saw that as a direction. And I do that to this day. I, to this day, look at people I admire or traits that I would like to emulate, and without envy or without feeling less than, simply start aiming in a direction that would bring me closer to what I admire. And it's a really great way to move forward in life in a positive and fun way rather than in a way that some people, and I did when I was much, much younger, tend to do. And that was before I had the courage to believe that I could do things that I later on excelled at. When we don't have that as a tool, we can internalize everything, and it leaves us feeling less than again and again and again, and that's so destructive.
You know what, I have to say I so agree. There was a point in the memoir part of your book where you say your perception at the time, and the time was when your father left your mother because and wasn't basically taking care of herself, right? And your perception at the time, to be worthy of love, you must be thin. Now, I want to say that 90% or more, probably 100%, let's just be honest, of women have internalized some version of that perception. Our whole society is based on that. And not to overshare, but in my first marriage, that was the message. I mean, my first husband is a good person, but he was taught that for women to be worthy of anything, any kind of worthiness, they had to be thin and good looking. And any man had to have a woman like that. If he didn't have a woman like that, he was pitied, right? Or he didn't look like a big shot or powerful. So my first marriage was full of very, very ugly and mean, heartbreaking comments. And you so bravely shared in your book that you actually made two attempts to take your own life. And it resonated so much with me because I have a vision of the day that I stood in my bathroom holding a gun to my head, ready to pull the trigger because of all of that ugliness in my marriage. And because those comments he made resonated so much because the whole world basically teaches you that. So it didn't feel like he was wrong. It felt like he was just living the truth, and here I was, not being worthy. And so what I have thought and thought and thought about this so much through all of my reading and coaching and just life, and I've come to the point where I can now him some grace and feel for that person and all the guys that are that way, including your dad, because society tells them things too about their work based on what kind of woman. When I say kind, I don't mean like smart and funny. I mean like what her measurements are, what kind of woman you can get. So all of this disordered thinking is all around us. And it is devastating to our self-worth, our confidence, and it actually becomes devastating to our longevity, our health, because it is very, very, very hard to break away from those pillars that get built inside of us. And we think they're made out of marble. You have to be thin to be worthy. And so at some point, many of us say, well, that's never going to happen, is it? I'm never going to wear a size 5, so screw it. Get me the large pizza. And we just give up. And like you shared, the woman Catherine shared, is that then our bodies get very, very used to that world that we create, that kind of food, that kind of thinking, that kind of sedentary life, that kind of all that stuff. And all of that robs us. I mean, we don't know how many years we get to live, you know. We don't know. But, you know what they say, it's not the years of your life, it's the life in your years. What if your life could be so much more exciting and hopeful and fun and fearless because we make some changes in how we eat and how we live? Yeah. And that, I think, and I want to ask you to explain lifestyle as medicine. I think I did a backhanded explanation of it just now, but tell our listeners about what is lifestyle medicine or as medicine.
Well, I'm going to first comment about what you said. I mean, my emotions were in my throat just listening to what you were saying because it's pervasive, and I watched my mother hate herself her entire life, and I'm sure because she was a large woman, always large, 5'10", and usually 200 and something, 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 and she could never get down, and I know all she could hear in her head was my father's words. He even told me once, she reminded him of a cow. It breaks my heart. So let me go back to what you were saying. I think there's a difference of treating ourselves with hate and that's a really strong word, but I'm just going to use it because it's a simple term that most people understand. We either hate ourselves into where we are, or we love ourselves into where we are. Lifestyle is medicine. The way I see it is a way of loving ourselves into what we become. Let's just forget the weight loss. This is the way I feel about it, and I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to sort of summarize. If we love ourselves enough to see the future that you've outlined, to see the future I outline, I see decades ahead of myself in vibrant health. You see at 60, and I'm 73. At 60, you see decades ahead of yourself in vibrant health. There's only one way to make that happen, and that is to take good care of our body. Our body is the engine of a car you love. You take really good care of that car. You've got to take care of this body. Lifestyle as medicine, the precepts of the pillars of lifestyle medicine, as outlined by the College of Lifestyle Medicine, is nutrition, good nutrition, whole food, plant-based, or loaded with the plants that give us the antioxidants, all that. Read my book. You'll get an idea of what I'm saying. So I'm saying that to the audience. And anyway, whole food, plant-based, good, solid food. Stay away from junk. Carbohydrates, whole food carbohydrates, all those potatoes, all that the sweet potatoes, et cetera, the oatmeal that I had this morning. Carbohydrates, whole food, are nature's appetite suppressant and antidepressant. Maybe that's why I could stop binging. Okay, number two is prioritizing sleep. Make sure you're getting 7 to 8 hours. It makes a difference. Number three, movement. We've got to move our bodies. It's the only way our brain knows that we're alive and then sends out all the neurotransmitters that we need. That's simplistic, but I'm going to say you fall in love with moving your body. And then number four is community. We cannot live, we're tribal. We cannot live without connecting with other people on a regular basis. The more often we do that, giving love, receiving love, the more often we do that, the healthier we are. Stay away from addictive substances, alcohol, narcotics, smoking. You take all of that, love ourselves enough to give ourselves that kind of a framework, and that's what I outline in my book. Simple ideas under each of those and even more. To love yourself into that kind of behavior, not punishing yourself, but loving yourself forward, all of the rest takes care of itself. The weight will get to where you want to go and what's healthy for you. Your feelings, your neurotransmitters will become balanced so that you actually feel good and your anxiety is reduced. So you don't feel anxious to the degree that you do self-destructive things because you don't know what else to do to feel okay. All of that comes bundled in a package, and I think that's the mic drop.
Well, you know, I will say I totally agree that you cannot love yourself. I mean, excuse me, you cannot hate yourself into change. You have to love yourself into change. I tried for years and years and years through exercise and everything to lose this weight, right? And funny thing, in the last 10 years, I've lost and kept it off through love of myself. So it's real. I know it's real. And I still have a few more to go to get to something. I don't even know. I mean, I should be super, super happy just where exactly I am right now. And I am. But then, you know, we're taught there's always more to lose. There's always more money to make and always more pounds to lose, right? We're wrapping up. And I want to just say a couple of last things. First of all, you guys get the book. It's out on Amazon. It's amazing, and it is life-changing. Two, check Nan out on YouTube. She does videos on cooking and living, and then she has a new You have a new garden with Nan.
In the garden with Nan series.
Yeah.
I'm a master gardener, and I was a landscape designer for decades. So I've got that new part of it. Go ahead.
So it's simple. Go to YouTube/Nan Simonsen. It's S-I-M-O-N-S-E-N. And you can also put her name.com and go to her website. You need to know her, you guys. This is life and death. This is life and joy, I want to say. And two more things. One of the things that she said in her book that I love so much, I wrote it down, is that, and her husband loved the foods that loved them back. Think of it that way. I love the food that loves me back. And she wrote what it felt like to make these changes was a lot like the song, I Can See Clearly Now the Rain Is Gone. You know that song? It's going to be a bright, 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 sunshiny day. That's what you have to look forward to with making this lifestyle changes that supports your wellness. Friends, this is for you, you amazing, wonderful, worthy, valuable people who are listening right now. Get her book. Follow her. Listen to her. Watch her. And then try your best to be as like her as you can be for the rest of the years of your life. That's my advice.
Thank you, Diana.
You are so, so welcome. Thank you for joining us. I mean, we could have gone on, and I did go on and on. But now our time is gone and gone, right? So I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show. And Nan Simonsen, I've sent it a million times now. And I want to thank our listeners, both in the United States and internationally, because we are an international show. It's so exciting. After the show today, you can listen to Women Lead Radio on all subscription podcasts, specifically Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. We're expanding quickly to a daily radio show and podcast. So for now, we'll be back again for another live Women Lead Radio show on Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific time and on Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific time. It's been my sincere pleasure, as always, to be your host today. And I just wish that you go out today, everyone, and make it a lighthearted life kind of day. Thanks.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.